Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 271 of the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. How are you?
Well, I'm feeling a little confused today because we're talking about school. We're thinking about school and the decisions that we're making for the fall. And it's just been an interesting conversation so far. So we actually started this topic last week. Mm-hmm. And we actually had 12 of our listeners call in and just kind of let us know about their experiences and what they're facing. You know, some people are going to be going back to school pretty soon. Some, like me, aren't for another couple of months, but just kind of got some perspectives from people all across the country saying what is going on with them, like what decisions they're facing, what it's going to look like, what school's going to look like for their kids if they end up going. And I think it's probably a good idea to listen to that episode first before this one, just because we're using it as kind of a jumping off point. It's kind of the state of the, you know, the state of the union, as you will. And then this episode, we're really going to talk, we're going to dig in a lot on the tone around all this, like how hard these decisions are, kind of going back in time to that episode we did, what was it, back in April?
May.
Okay. When we talked about how the country was starting to slowly reopen and people were making these really hard decisions about how to handle distancing with their families, whether they were going to go to restaurants, whether they were going to do play dates, stuff like that in the future, and how much judgment and insecurity there was around those choices. I feel like we're right back there again, only now the topic is school. And it's been a hot, hot topic on my social feeds. And among my friends, for sure.
Yeah, this is so interesting. Because we relocated this summer, I was particularly dialed in and trying to learn about the school systems that I was coming up into in Santa Barbara. And so I told you this offline, but I was like doing really deep dives into articles about schools reopening and articles by educators and pediatricians about a week before it hit the national conversation. And I was doing it for my own. It was interesting to me. I'm sure I was trying to like predict or control like I typically do. And I was entering two new schools for my kids. And then all of a sudden, school reopening was national news, you know, several days ago, and has stayed that way. So we are living through truly unprecedented times. And we use that phrase a little tongue in cheek because it's so overused right now. But I find it interesting that national conversations around things like childcare, kids' mental health, education, and learning, which are so core and central and fundamental to parenting and to moms and motherhood. So they're things that I'm interested in anyway, but all of a sudden, literally everybody's talking about them. Like they are national news stories. So I don't know what quite to say about that, except it's interesting that where we send our kids in just a few weeks is something that all of a sudden it seems like the whole country is interested in and has opinions about. And yet it's still a very personal conversation in our homes and with our families. So,
it really is. And I think it's very interesting when you look at the fact that for better or for worse, we live in an economy that has been kind of created around schools being there and being a place for kids to go during the day so that single parent families can work and so that double income families can both work. Or that both people can work. And I think now we're seeing the cracks in what happens when the option of doing that safely or economically feasibly goes away. Mm-hmm. And I just, it's so, you're right. It's a huge conversation and not one. I'm not an economist.
Nope.
I'm not an infectious disease specialist. I'm not an economist. I'm not a public education expert. Yeah. But we are the experts in our own homes and we have to make decisions that feel good for us while also weighing these broader decisions, and that can be really, really hard.
It can be really hard, and we've talked many times on this show about being judicious about your circle of influence. You know, on the one extreme, we have Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. I was like obsessed with Twitter for a couple weeks, then I had to get off because it was stressing me out. But so that's like, you know, there are times when we kind of want, we listen to the entire internet, and then at the other extreme, You know, it's you and your co-parent, if you have one, and your individual family unit making the best decision for your family. And then there's usually something in the middle, right? We have our trusted sources for information. We hopefully have a group of mom friends that we can talk honestly with. And hopefully, ideally, you have, you know, people around you who are making different decisions, but doing so with love and empathy and support for one another. I mean, that's kind of like my wish for all moms.
But yes,
when the stakes get so high, depending on where you are in that, you might feel very isolated right now and you don't know anybody and you don't have that tribe. You might be consuming all of the news and the social media fire hose and feel very overwhelmed on that end of the spectrum, or maybe you're somewhere in the middle. So I think our goal for today is just to work through this together, with an emphasis, as always, on broadening our own capacity for empathy for other parents. And I think both of us, Megan, we need that for ourselves, too. We're not, yeah. Neither of us is like, you know, a saint when it comes to feeling feelings of judgment or like feeling like what we're doing is the right way. And we're just being asked right now to like challenge that at every turn, I think. And it's hard. Yes.
Yep. It is. Well, should we go to a break? And then when we get back, we can really dig in.
Dive in.
Yep. Sarah, you just moved. And so you're going to be in unpacking land for like what, the next 3 months or so, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe I can convert you into a bath lover like me to combat all that stress kind of induced by the half empty boxes surrounding you.
Oh my gosh, this might be possible because for the first time in over 10 years, I have a bathtub that I might actually consider taking a bath in. And if anything could get me to start indulging in regular baths, it would be our sponsor, Osea. Osea, that's Osea, is a results-focused line of pure, safe, botanical bath, body, and skincare products. And Megan, now I'm eyeballing that Gigertina therapy bath you keep talking about.
Oh my gosh, that stuff is amazing. And I use it in conjunction with the Salts of the Earth body scrub while I'm lounging in the tub. And then when I get out, I slather on the Undaria algae body oil. It basically feels like I've just gotten a spa treatment. So Sarah, I highly recommend this regimen and I think you should get on it.
Okay, I will. Well, even if you aren't a bath lover like Megan, there's plenty to love about Osea's products. All of Osea's products incorporate botanical sources from around the world, and they're packed with nutrients, minerals, and other nourishing plant-based stuff. Think of it as like superfood for your skin.
And we've got a great deal for you to try them out. Go to oseamalibu.com/momhour for $10 off your first purchase of $50 or more. There's free shipping for U.S. orders of $75 or more and free samples with every order, which is a really fun way to try out even more products. Again, that's oseamalibu, oseamalibu.com/momhour for $10 off your first purchase of $50 or more.
We are welcoming back our sponsor, Breyers Carb Smart, today, and you've been hearing us talk about their yummy frozen treats for a few weeks now. They come in both bars and tubs in really yummy flavors like caramel swirl, chocolate-covered almond, vanilla, and peanut butter. And each treat has only 150 calories or less and 3 to 5 grams net carbs per serving.
Yeah, Breyers Carb Smart is the perfect frozen treat for my kids and me while we're hanging out by the pool on hot days. And we love that Breyers partners with American farmers for 100% grade A milk and cream in all their products, including the Carb Smart line.
Whether you already follow a low-carb lifestyle or just like to keep a variety of sweet options at the ready, we think you'll love Breyers Carb Smart. My kids love the fudge bars, and they have 3 net carbs and only 60 calories per serving. That means the kids can have a late afternoon sweet treat without totally wrecking their dinner.
So here's a special offer for our listeners from Breyers Carb Smart. Just go to Breyers.com/themomhour to get a special $2 off coupon. Yep, that's $2 off to enjoy delicious Breyers Carb Smart frozen treats. That's Breyers.com/themomhour to print your $2 off coupon and then pick up your favorite Breyers Carb Smart flavors at Walmart, Target, Kroger, Amazon Fresh, or wherever you shop. Okay, so we're going to dive into like what the issues on the table are in a minute here that we're all dealing with. But I guess, I want to get in my time machine and go back a couple of months to the episode we did about judgment and mom shaming and reiterate like what I feel was like one of the key points from that whole episode, which is that parenting decisions are hard enough already. Mm-hmm. And when you're faced with a choice where none of the decisions are that great or have been established as the best, like there's no consensus about what the best thing is to do, it's even harder because then you need to like really feel secure about your choice. So you end up kind of like doubling down on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the flip side of doubling down of that coin can be judgment or guilt, feeling judged or perceiving yourself as being judged, even if maybe you're not. So I just want to put it out there that like, we don't, even if you feel great, again, like we've said before, even if usually you're a parent who's super confident and you feel great about assessing risk and you feel great about making decisions for your family, right now, some of that ability to do that with super confidence is not there. It doesn't exist.
I agree. And the thing that came up for me as I was thinking about that past episode as well is we have a habit as moms of thinking that other people are super secure in their decisions because, like I said last week, you see that tip of the iceberg. You see the choice they've made to send their kid, to not send their kid, to, you know, to enroll in an online virtual academy. And it can appear from the outside like that other family feels 100% secure, confident, and excited about their decision. What you don't see is the self-doubt that's happening under that other roof. You know what I mean? So for some reason, we think we have all of the uncertainty and everybody else is super secure in their choices. And we've seen that in new motherhood, right? Questions about sleeping and feeding and what kind of stroller to buy. It just, for some reason, we make the assumption that everybody else has it figured out and we're the only ones kind of waffling. And that's, we have to believe that's not true. Everybody is waffling.
We know it's not true. Right now, you're so right, Sarah, but right, everybody is conflicted. Yeah. Like everyone I know, I don't really know anyone, the chatter around here that feels 100% great about any of the choices on the table. So let's talk about like, what are the issues du jour, right? We talked last episode about what school may look like for our kids in the fall, but we really didn't talk too much about how we feel about those options, what the downsides and negatives are. So I guess I'll go first and just throw some out.
Yeah.
I'm hearing a lot, and I'll also talk about how some of these feel for me. Like we hear a lot about the worries about kids falling behind or not getting socialized if they're not in school. And then on the flip side, there's this conversation happening about safety. Mm-hmm. Like, what about teachers getting sick? What about kids getting sick? Logistically, like what happens if, and I will say I have not seen this question answered really anywhere concretely, what happens if someone tests positive? Does that mean everyone that kid came in contact with is now quarantined? Does that mean the teacher is quarantined? Does that mean they have to bring in subs? Where are all these subs magically going to come from? Uh-huh. So there's all these questions on the table that again make even the best plans start to seem a little pie in the sky. And like I had mentioned about wanting to do virtual, I would rather just know. Like I would rather just know how the year is going to go. My other concern, and we will definitely delve more into mental health, but my other concern for someone like Clara, she really didn't do well with virtual last semester. And just because I know my kid and she's in sixth grade and not like in, you know, 11th grade, I'm way more concerned with her mental well-being at the age of 11 going on 12 than her education. Yeah. I just am. Like, I don't think that's something that is often great in middle schoolers anyway. Like, it's really tough. It's a tough time of life. And I don't want to pile on the toughness by her having to feel like she's very on camera all day, or for her to feel like she's very on in school with a mask on and not understanding how to navigate that. So I may decide virtual is not a good option for her either. Like that might be off the table. And then I feel bad because I'm taking money away from my school district. Yeah. So it's like, it doesn't really feel like there's much winning going on.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think since we've brought up the topic of, you know, judgment and criticism, I think one of the things that makes this so difficult is what different families are solving for, what their highest priorities are all important. So I'll just name a few. Yeah. Having reliable childcare so that you can work full time is extremely important. It does not affect every family the same. If you work from home flexibly, or if one parent is able to stay home, it's not going to be the highest priority, but it might be for the family next door. Health and safety and actual COVID exposure is, I believe we'd all say, is very important to us and our communities. It's going to be more critical to families that have an immunosuppressed person living in their home, or a grandparent, or a grandparent is the child care. Learning and academics and not falling behind, you mentioned, again, I think we can all agree is important. It's going to have a heightened importance for a child who gets support for learning differences at school, or for a kid who's, you know, on the verge of their next big, like, you know, a junior who's applying to elite colleges or something. There's scenarios in which the academics and the academic support kind of become the driver. And then, you know, social and mental health, same thing. So it's like, we can all agree all of these things are important, but what makes this so difficult is that each family may have shuffled those things. And actually within the same family, like you mentioned for Clara, within the same family, you're sort of shuffling the order of those priorities according to each kid and each situation, which then, like you said, then it's all kind of terrible because we can't yes. solve it all. We can't. It's really right. hard. I can just maybe talk a little bit about priority is the wrong word, but what those kind of rocks are for my kids and how they see them. Distance learning was really difficult for my youngest in first grade last year. Fairly difficult for my middle, who was in fourth, and then pretty good for my sixth grader, who already did a lot on her computer. A lot of her classes, they had been in person, of course, but they turned all their assignments in. They had this online platform that they were very familiar with, so that felt easiest. So for me, thinking about fall, and I do kind of assume we're going to be distanced at this point. We're recording this July 17th. And last week I mentioned that in real time, my governor's about to make a big announcement. And I just think it's likely that we'll all be distanced. But for me, I have different kind of priorities for each of the three kids. I want to make sure my younger two have the ability to make some friends and see some human bodies multiple times per week. And I'm hopeful that with all we've learned about masking and social distancing, I'm hoping that I can have, you know, outdoor play dates, maybe with masks or maybe even without masks at an even farther distance. We were so shut in the spring that it was almost like distance learning was one challenge, but lack of physical activity and social interaction was a compounding challenge. And I really want to have that be different this fall for my kids. So I guess I'm saying that the social emotional part is a driver for all three of my kids, but especially the younger two, because it didn't go so great in the spring.
So Sarah, I'm curious, because I agree those are very important things, and we're fortunate enough to have a small little bubble of people that my kids are doing outdoor play dates with pretty regularly. And I don't feel we have a couple cousins and a few really close friends of Clara's, and William has a couple close friends. Owen, I think, is very lonely. Mm. I sent you this morning some screenshots of a text conversation. He's at his dad's right now. And I just asked him something this morning, and he sent me like this long, like page after paragraph of a description of a movie he just watched. It reminded me of when your like 5-year-old is trying to explain their like superhero play to you, or the episode of whatever show they just watched or whatever. And you have to sit there and listen and listen and listen. This was like the 14-year-old's version of that. And it was
so cute.
It was really cute and kind of touching. And then I thought, oh no, I really thought about it. And I thought, he's the one of my kids who, besides his one cousin, and we just keep saying how grateful we are that Jack and Owen have each other, he's really not had a lot of contact with any of his school friends. And he's always been the kind of kid, and I think you've described Reed this way too. Well, although you said that Reed had his little buddy gang.
Yeah, he has two good buddies, but yeah.
Yeah, Owen has friends who are school friends, and he doesn't care that he doesn't see them that much when he comes home. Like, he switches out of school mode into home mode, and then he has his brothers. And that's typically, I feel like, been enough for him because he gets enough of that at school.
Yeah.
And then you take that away, he's starting to lose touch with those kids. I think that's really what's happening. Not seeing them, not being in the same classroom, he's not experiencing, they're just not staying in touch. They're not staying close. And so this is a very long-winded way of saying, if we don't get to go back into the classroom, how do we deal with that? Like, how would you deal with that for Violet, who is young, and it's, like, how is she just going to make friends online? Well, it's not the same as the way that adults do this stuff, right? So I just wonder if you have any ideas like, is there something you're thinking about?
I've thought about it a lot because we moved. So we don't even have the old.
And you have nobody.
And Violet, to be honest, didn't have super tight friendships in her kindergarten and first grade. She had little friends and we did some play dates, but she hadn't clicked in yet to a group or one buddy. So moving didn't feel like taking her away from anything in particular, whereas for Reed, it did. But she's got to be able to make new friends. And it's funny, she's very clingy to me, to mom. And we've talked about the comparisons to Clara at that age. Like, I joke, like, I'm her best friend. She would prefer to just hang out with me all day. But developmentally, she is ready to start engaging in social groups. She'll be in second grade. She's 7 and a half. That's often when friendships, like, really do start to blossom on their own. And it's not just who your mom's friend's kid is, but they really start to meet their own friends. And so it is something I've thought a lot about. And I'm hopeful that while it may be impractical for schools to operate normally, if we can control the community spread and understand the effectiveness of other measures like masking and social distancing, what I see is that I have a real responsibility as a parent, as the one who prompted this move to a new town, to find us a couple of families that maybe I meet the moms online through the school, you know, somehow, and we start texting, but really make an effort to get outside with our kids and go on hikes or go to the beach when it's safe to do so. And, you know, I've talked about it. I can be a little lazy about that stuff because my kids, they play well together. They go out in the yard, but I feel a renewed, you know, like it's going to be one of my rocks this fall to make sure that I'm creating the environment for my kids to make friends. They might not make a bestie right away, but I don't want to sit at home all fall. And then something else I was going to add about the olders too, and the falling behind academically. And I don't know how you feel about this with your high schoolers, but I've always been so much like, summer is for free play, like give your brain a break. And my kids, you know, have done well academically. So I've been like almost a little soapboxy about how I don't think we need to do any summer learning or summer workbooks. But this is, you know, we change our mind about stuff in the time of COVID. And I have really seen small examples of like spelling and handwriting and mental arithmetic in my older kids where I'm like, okay, how can we like,
my sister said Quinn is getting dumber.
I'm going to co-sign that in a couple of ways, in some specific ways. Mental math is like a muscle, right? Like,
being able
to do, you know, to compute. And with youngers, if you're listening to this and you have little kids, you've probably heard me on my soapbox about so much of their learning comes from play and make believe and getting dirty outside. And I still thoroughly believe that. But there's a difference when we're talking about older kids who are engaged in academics and when we're talking about this. At one point, we thought this would be like an 8-week break. Now we're talking about 6 months or 9 months or 12 months. That changes how I feel about enrichment. So this summer, we did a little bit of like what I called learning time. And I had the kids listening to a daily news podcast. I picked a few activities that they could rotate through that were just slightly academic, like a typing program on the computer and some coding. But I'm really going to be considering, you know, either purchasing or finding free enrichment as this goes on, maybe in just one subject or maybe one tutor or maybe getting creative. But I guess my point is I've never been a parent who like really worried all that much about quote unquote enrichment outside of school. And I'm changing in that it is something I'm looking ahead to, especially for Allegra going into seventh grade, because I see the effect of being home, you know? So,
Yeah. And I'm usually the same way. Like I'm usually summers are free and easy and easy going. And they've got, not only are they potentially going to be going into another situation like the fall or like the spring in the fall, but they're already dull.
Dull.
Because we did go so feral in the spring by necessity in my house and really just to keep us all kind of comfortable and not stressed. I mean, it was like really important, but I think you're right. And the way I'll probably handle it is to slowly ramp up and start getting, they have now, you know, they all have all these computer programs that they do all the time anyway that they're used to. I don't have to learn how to get them on them. I don't have to vet them. Like the school already has them.
That's
they're
great.
Available. It's just up to me now to like, make sure they're actually doing some of them and that kind of thing. I want to dig in on two different things that you mentioned. One being this idea of like, how are you going to help your kids meet other kids and that is your responsibility. And this is kind of like one of those delicate things that I feel like could potentially just be contentious. And I'm not trying to be. But like, I think we're all going to have to be less scorched earth than we were last spring, even if the numbers look not great. And I guess the reason I say that is this is going to be with us for some time, right? Like if we all just go back into our homes and literally don't see anybody for 3 months and our kids are on computers all day long and have no like physical contact with any, or not even contact, but like, no, they don't see, like mm-hmm. you said, human bodies with their actual eyes outside. I don't feel good about that. Like, yeah. I don't feel good about the direction we're going to be going with an entire generation of kids if that's like where we stay.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like we're all going to have to maybe reassess our comfort with risk and how we handle it, and maybe make some more difficult individual family decisions than we felt we could in the spring. And I just hope that that's not like me sounding like I'm saying throw caution to the wind and no. everyone just go bump up against each other in a restaurant or something or a bar. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But if your fall could be materially better because you hang out with two other families.
Yes.
Even though there's a risk incurred there, to me, the greater risk is worse.
So I don't take it that way at all, the way you explained it. And it's something I've observed in general. I don't think you're alone there. I mean, I guess if there's a hopeful part of me, it's that our public health messaging and our knowledge about the virus and spread has continued to improve. And we do know more. We have more data and we have more experience now about how to do things safely. And I think even those who wish to be cautious or who might have an at-risk family member, we've been through this. We're more experienced, unfortunately. Right. I wish we didn't have to be more experienced than we were when it felt like the only option was to truly stay home. I mean, I talked in our food episode a couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, about how I didn't even order takeout for 6 weeks. Not because I was so afraid of getting the virus, but I tried it once and it didn't show up. And I just decided like, well, I guess we don't do takeout. And now that seems so silly, but like
silly. Well, right. But everything was so like, I feel like the part of your brain, and I'm thinking about like a computer. There was the stuff that usually just hums in the background and doesn't, you don't hear it. It doesn't really take up a lot of space. Suddenly that stuff went to the foreground.
Yeah.
So like just going to the store, like I remember how fanatical I was for a while about making sure, like I had hand sanitizer and I would sanitize my my steering wheel before and after, my car door, my shopping cart, not to mention my hands. And then I'd get home and basically like take a shower every time I'd been out. And I don't do that anymore. I mean, it's not that I don't think the risk is there. It's just, I'm wearing a mask. I'm very aware now of how much I'm touching things. I'm very aware of like when I'm, you know, I make sure to sanitize my hands after I touch the credit card machine or whatever. Like I've kind of figured it out. And those things are now receding. They're just becoming part of the background hum.
You're
again.
You're so right.
I wouldn't go into Aldi. I didn't go into Aldi for 4 months because I couldn't handle the idea of getting to the register and not knowing what to do about the bag thing. Like I just couldn't, like it was just too much. And so now it doesn't, like, I feel like I can do stuff again. Like we can do hard things again because it's become a little more normal. It's taking up less memory and RAM.
Yes.
In the brain.
I think you're right. And I think I'm also reminded of my conversation with Dr. Erin from our Voices episode this month, which she really did talk about the developmental delays is the wrong word. But the longer this progresses and the more that you keep that kids are kept out of their regular developmental milestones as it relates to socializing and being separating from mom and dad, for example, the more we're going to have to get creative. And she never said anything like you have to put them back in school. That was not the tone of the conversation, but that we are going to have to consider what it's like for a 7.5-year-old not to have played with friends since they were 6.5. There is a developmental consequence to that. And maybe it's the consequence that we have to accept and maybe it isn't, but it is a conversation that's going to be happening this fall. And I, just to circle back to what you said, I didn't take what you said as like a disregard for public health safety standards, but just simply like we have another layer to consider now because this is now a 6-month or a 12-month or an 18-month conversation and not a 6-week conversation like we thought we were having. So I didn't take it that way. And I think it's impossible not to move forward without those considerations. It doesn't mean you have to decide to go to every birthday party, or you may go through a season where you do decide that it's better for your family to stay locked down. But we're going to see people making personal risk assessments in the name of mental health, in the name of the economy, and it's going to be it's just going to be something that's happening. So I think it's important to talk about.
Well, and I think maybe just to wrap up this segment, going back to the episode we had a few months ago, or two months ago, I guess, where I remember distinctly you saying, Sarah, even if you haven't left your house yet, even if you've completely followed, and talking to listeners, like, even if you're one of those people who has done everything the way you're supposed to, have been completely locked down, never leaves the house, at some point you're going to have to make a decision too. Like,
yeah,
some people were starting to make them then, and some people were hanging back, but at some point it's going to be everyone's first time.
Yes.
They send their kids out into the world, or they, you know, encounter someone with like less than 6 feet away, because let's be real here, you know, the distancing stuff is, these are great restrictions and great guidelines. How enforceable they are in an elementary school classroom, I think, stands to be seen. So, right. Like, we all know, like, if schools actually open, that we are making this, like, we are going to be all deciding.
Yes. Something.
We don't get the option now of just hunkering down and doing nothing and doing what, like, whoever they are, tell us to do, because right now they're not really telling us to do any one specific thing.
Yeah.
There's a whole array of like menu options.
Yeah.
So
agreed.
Well, that's hard.
Yeah. And that's a good time. Let's take a break. And then when we come back, I want to circle back to schools and what you just said, because you're so right. If it's not August 20th or September 8th, we are going to go back to school someday. And so I think let's dig in more on schools when we come back. We are welcoming back our sponsor, Newton Baby, today. And if you are adding a baby to your family this year, you're going to want to listen for this great deal on the first 100% breathable and 100% washable crib mattress. I kind of wish I could sleep on this mattress like myself, Megan.
Right? Well, safe, comfortable sleep for babies is something we know is important to all parents. And right now, I think anything that brings peace of mind and a good night's sleep to moms is worth prioritizing. Newton crib mattresses are organic, hypoallergenic, and don't contain any foam, latex, or adhesives, so it's not surprising they're voted number one by leading pediatric experts and sleep coaches worldwide. And if you check out the 5-star reviews on Amazon, you'll see that parents love them too.
Newton crib mattresses are designed with breathe-through technology, which means you can basically smush your face into them, or your baby can, and they'll still be able to breathe. I tried it. It's true. And did we mention this is a washable crib mattress? I can't get over this part. The unzippable cover goes right into the washing machine, and then you can pop the core in the tub or shower to keep it bacteria-free and clean. And because they offer 100 nights to try out your Newton Baby mattress with free returns, there's no risk to try it out.
Newton Baby is offering our listeners $50 off a Newton crib mattress so that you can try the hashtag Breathe to Believe challenge. Just use the promo code TheMomHour when you check out at NewtonBaby.com. Again, that's Newton Baby, NewtonBaby.com, and enter code TheMomHour to get $50 off today.
So as everyone has probably heard by now, I am in the middle of a big move, and that basically means most of my routines are in shambles. And Megan, I'm so glad I made regular skincare a part of my routine months ago, because now it's a habit. And I'm also really grateful to our sponsor, Dermatology, for making it so easy to keep that habit strong with the starter kit they created just for us and for our listeners.
Totally agree, Sarah. I have found there's something really centering and soothing about a self-care routine of any kind. And Dermatology, that's DRMTLGY, no vowels, makes it so easy to get started. And we both love their products. We are talking medical grade skincare here, made with pure, safe, clinically proven ingredients. They feel great going on, and it feels good to know I'm doing something nice for myself every time I use them.
We've talked a lot about the SPF 45 sunscreen moisturizer lately, but Megan, you know, I'm also a huge fan of the retinol complex. I can really see a big difference in my skin since I started using it. And you're definitely going to want to check out the starter package Dermatology has put together just for our listeners, because not only does it make caring for your skin a total no-brainer, but it's also an amazing deal. The bundle comes with a cleanser, a serum, the sunscreen we love, and that retinol complex, and they're all designed to be used together. Dermatology has marked the package all the way down to $99 with free shipping.
This package is usually $175, so you're getting high-end skincare at drugstore prices, and we think you're going to love the products as much as we do. Head to themomhour.com/skincare, and it's super easy to order the bundle right from there. Again, themomhour.com/skincare will take you right to Dermatology's special offer for our listeners. Check it out.
Okay, so before the break, Megan, you mentioned what I had said in that May episode about if you're not ready now, you're going to be going out into the world someday at some point, if we all agree that this isn't going to last forever. And kind of having empathy for that first time feeling that it's scary to go out of whatever you've decided is your protective bubble. And maybe you're seeing the grandparents for the first time. Maybe you're getting on an airplane for the first time this summer. I know a lot of people who did that. So recognizing that it's uncomfortable whenever it happens and whatever prompts you to make that decision. And I want to tie that back to schools, because I have to admit, in my mind, it feels simpler if we can just be virtual in the fall. I just moved. I'd like to be right. hunker in at my new home and unpack and get all of our systems down. And it's like it's not a great solution, but it's a known solution, as opposed to the unknown feels a little bit scary. And I realize the limitations in my own thinking, because of course, if we are all virtual, it's not going to be forever. So there is right. like,
at some point,
yeah, at right. some point we're going to go back. And last week I mentioned that both schools that our kids will attend have laid out really wonderfully thought out plans for small classes and, you know, cleaning protocols and masking. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I'm not sure that's going to happen this August. But what I kind of forgot is it's very likely that whenever we go back, it will look something like that. So it's not like yeah. the planning has been all for naught. It just might not be what we do in the first re-entry this fall. It might be what happens in October or February or whatever it is. So I think that's interesting. And I think for the second half of this episode, we can just talk through like the main options and kind of what we see as the pros and cons here. Virtual,
yeah.
homeschool, in-person school. Is there another one? Did I miss one?
Well, hybrid, but that's kind yeah. of like all the pros and cons
yes.
of the other
yes.
ones, right?
Combined with yeah. a very yeah. complicated schedule. Can I just say this about yeah. hybrid? I think, like we said last week, it's trying to solve for a lot of different variables like space and facilities and resources. But I have a friend who has three kids potentially in three different, like elementary, middle, and high school on three different hybrid schedules. And taking aside, you know, the safety and all the other concerns, I was like, oh my gosh, that would do a mother in to have
yes.
like three
oh my gosh.
Different schedules of days Ugh. And times that yeah. the kids were at school. Anyway, we'll get to hybrid, but that's one thing that isn't even getting talked about a lot is if your kid goes to school half days or 3 days right. a week, and then you have a different kid who goes to a different school, different days a week. Oh my gosh.
Well, let's start with in person.
Okay.
Because I think that was what everyone hoped for originally, yep. right? When this all started. And now we're looking like in some places it's possible. Uh-huh. I would say, like we've both said, it doesn't look very likely that it's going to start that way for probably either of our districts, but we don't know
yep. yet.
So, in person. Okay. So obviously, those of us whose kids are in school, and you know, I know there's a lot of listeners who are homeschoolers, and I'm sure they have like a totally different perspective on this. But those of us whose kids are usually in school, we've made that choice for reasons. Mm-hmm. We have reasons. One of them is probably that we don't want to educate our own kids. Another one may be that we work outside the home, and suddenly, isn't it so fantastic that now it's free? Like yeah. I get to send my kids to public school. I don't have to pay out the wazoo for childcare anymore. That's a big factor. There are such benefits to in-person education. Like we yeah. talked about, that teachers are trained to teach it live. Mm-hmm. And kids are, the way they're used to socializing in classrooms, I was reading an article the other day, I think it was the Washington Post, and it was written by an educator. And she was saying, just like imagine a classroom where, and this is going to like the con side of mm-hmm. how it would actually look. Like if kids were distanced, if kids were masked, if kids were all facing forward. She was saying, just imagine a classroom where you can't lean into your teacher to have them show you how to work a math problem, mm-hmm. a math problem, mm-hmm. or you can't whisper in your friend's ear mm-hmm. at lunch or whatever. Like those are things we are so conditioned to do that we don't even think about mm-hmm. it. And then having that taken away, to me feels like it shows just how important that is to the school experience and how not like that mm-hmm. this other version would be. Mm-hmm. My sister-in-law, Jenna, is a teacher, and she has talked about the fact that her kids always sit in groups of four facing mm-hmm. each other. That's how they do the majority of their work. She's a science teacher, so they work on, you know,
collaborative
experiments
yeah.
and collaborative yeah. stuff. And she's like, honestly, I don't know how to teach them all facing forward and not collaborating. That,
yeah.
you know, she'll figure it out. She's a great teacher, but like, That's not the deal, right? Yeah. So those are like the pros. The pros are the cons.
Yes,
I think. In person.
I want to add another pro and con. You know, another yeah. dual pair here for younger kids. And that is the structure of a school day is often such a gift for children in the 4, 5, 6, 7 age range, where they really benefit from knowing what to expect at each time of day. And we've sung the praises of teachers before at how they're so good at breaking a day or a task or a project into chunks so that children know what's expected of them, when their next break is, when it's time to sing, when it's time to line up, what you do with your lunchbox after lunch. And it's a lot. I don't want to sound complainy here, and I hope that we're not, but it's a lot to ask of working parents and non-working parents at home to be the sole provider of societal rules and expectations right. for our children if we haven't chosen that homeschool option already. I think there's such huge benefits. Anyone who sent their kid off to a preschool, especially Montessori, but not just Montessori, knows what it's like when all of a sudden they start like clearing their plate or hanging up their backpack and they're really little, like 3 or 4, or they roll out their mat when it's nap time, and you realize that they're learning these rituals at school and you didn't have to be the one to come up with the ritual. And it's like magical. And maybe because I do love routine and structure so much that I see that as a plus, but I've seen the benefit to my kids of having that structure and in-person schooling. And I would argue that even a modified in-person instruction with masks and distancing would actually still have that benefit for a lot of kids. For some kids, it may be overwhelming. The whole mask thing may be too difficult, but there might be some kids floundering at home who would really benefit from that structured day. So that's another thing that I think would be a pro.
That is a pro. That is definitely in the pro, column.
Yeah.
Also, let's just talk briefly about societally, like school is a safe place for a lot of kids. It's a place where that might be the only meal or two that a child gets in a day. They rely on teachers to be their champions and the safe adult in their lives. And my concern, again, this is when the pro becomes the con. My concern is that will also be at risk.
Yep.
Like in kind of like an uncertain way. It just like being able to rely on school for childcare will be at risk if we don't know exactly what happens if there's an outbreak or if there's a case, if we don't know what quarantining would look like. And I just feel like, you know, and I'm not a politician, but I feel like at the leader level, there needs to be some solutions for this stuff, because if you're relying on school and you think you can send your kids there and then you go back to work, and then it turns out there was a case. And not only now does your child have to quarantine, but you have to maybe like potentially quarantine, or you might get sick. I mean, it feels like it starts, or the kid who was relying on school for their meal, now there's no place to go because they have to stay home because they're not well, like whatever it is.
Yeah.
It feels very tenuous to me. And I don't like the idea of us relying on something that we can't rely on, which I think is why I am so skeptical.
Yep. No, I agree. I think that's one of the cons this fall in particular, maybe not forever returning to school, but when numbers in many states are going up and community spread is up, it doesn't feel like, in fact, I have received some communications from one school where they just said, it's not if, but when, like when our school, and that just feels like, for all the pros, the disruption in these well thought out systems that everybody's worked really hard to try to open schools safely. I haven't seen, like you're saying, the addressing the disruption that will occur when, not if, there is community spread inside a school. So that's a pretty big con. I mean, if we're being honest, I'm laughing. I'm not really laughing, but that is a really big consideration right now, especially in areas of the country where numbers are going up, not down. So
it's like the unintended consequences that I think often we want to get behind something that sounds great. Mm-hmm. Like we want to get behind something in theory, but the theory only goes so far because you have to look at reality and there's what we wish was true and there's what's actually true.
Oh my gosh. I have felt that so much this past week with seeing these rosy, you know, optimistic plans for reopening in these wonderful schools that my kids get to attend, and having that dual feeling of like, I want to believe this is possible, and I am not sure that it is. So,
Well, let's talk about virtual.
Okay.
And again, I can go first unless you've got something
no,
to
go
say
for it.
Right
go
away.
For
but so obviously the benefit is that all that uncertainty goes away,
yeah.
right? Like, you know, a computer will still be in, well, within reasonable, you could reasonably assume you will still have a Wi-Fi connection and a computer in your home in September and beyond. And especially if this is being done by, I know each district is going to handle this differently, but if it's in your school, you're having like a third party vendor, which is how it looks in mine. Then we know that they kind of have it figured out. Mm. Like, we know that the education quality is going to be there. It's not going to be people trying to figure out how to do it at the last minute. It's not going to take away from classroom funding, and the school still gets the money. Like, the school mm-hmm. still gets to have that student, you know, that student money from the government or taxes. So those are all great pros.
Yeah.
The cons are you got kids in the house using up your Wi-Fi all day, right? There's still some level of oversight.
Yeah.
And for a younger kid, you have to actually be in the house to watch them and help them get on the computer, yeah. help them log in. Like, there's a lot of parental, if not involvement, oversight that's mm-hmm. still going to have to happen. And I don't want my kids looking at a computer all day.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had like a kindergartner, I really wouldn't want yep. them looking at a computer all day. So and the other thing is that at least in our district, if we do go with this third party option, it's nice because they've got it all figured out. But the bad thing is that the curriculum doesn't match up.
Oh, that's interesting.
So we could have we could have a situation where next semester my kids go back and all the classes they took, they count, but they don't get
wow.
them to the same place the kids that had the in-person learning.
Okay.
Got.
That's very interesting.
So that's a big con for a high schooler. I don't think it really, I don't care so much with an elementary or yeah. middle schooler, or I wouldn't if I had an elementary school, but for a high schooler, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
So I guess those are the cons, the pros and cons as I see them. Interested if you have
yeah.
others.
I mean, I think the ones I would add are maybe cons for, not for my personal family. And that's again, where we come back to, we're all solving for different priorities, but I
right.
think virtual learning for the lower grades is very, very hard and difficult and sad. And I'm just kind of heartbroken about it. So your kinders, your first graders, your pre-K, we'll see. I mean, second grade is Violet this year. She's gotten pretty computer savvy. She's reading now and she can type a little bit. And so second feels like maybe doable. Third, fourth feels much easier. So a big con to me is early education. I'm just like, if you yeah. are out there listening to this, or if you are an early educator, like, I don't know how to do that well and have it be meaningful for the kids. And it just is, that's a big con for me as the younger kids. And then, you know, dual parent families who work outside the home or who are in essential sectors, how do you do it? And that's where
right.
Single parent homes. Thank you for that. I this is maybe naive here, but I have found myself wishing that some of the creativity and innovation that we've been putting toward reopening schools would also, or instead, be put into solving childcare and equity issues for families who can't support at-home learning for their child, or whose children aren't safe at home by themselves while their schools are closed. Like, and maybe that's being done, and that's where I'm saying maybe I just don't know the full picture. But like you said, safely reopening schools comes with all of these what ifs, and those what ifs are affecting certain communities disproportionately. And like, who's thinking about that, I guess, is what I want to know. And
is this one of those things where everyone's in their silo and they're so focused on whatever the thing is in front of them that they're not considering this bigger
right.
thing? And I'll tell you, around here, we have a childcare shortage already.
Mm-hmm.
So if there were some reason that they couldn't open the schools and parents had to go to work, there really aren't options. Like
right.
there's nothing to be done. It's very, like I said, I think in the last episode, the first episode that we did in this series, like, it shows the cracks that mm-hmm. we have in the economic system that we have and the necessity of free school mm-hmm. to act as childcare. Now we're seeing how that can be problematic if school has to go away and as we know it. And I don't know what the solutions are to that, but yes, I agree. Like, it's alarming, and I And I worry that by pushing to have everyone go back to school, we just make it that much more inevitable that the people who really, really need it won't be able to use it.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason I would kind of like to opt out, frankly. But
I would be very curious if we have listeners in communities who are talking about this creatively, like is there childcare available or maybe learning centers available that are socially distanced? Like, where are younger kids supposed to go whose parents work full time if the schools are closed? Like, we have YMCAs that have remained open here, but are those YMCAs going to facilitate the home learning provided by the public schools? Like, are they linking up with each other? Those are the questions, and I fully admit I just haven't looked into it, but I hope that they're being addressed, because it's not okay to assume that everyone has at-home parents. Many of the time it's moms who are available to facilitate learning. That's not the reality that we live in. So, yeah.
And I have a feeling it's going to look like a lot of family care, a lot of, you know, I was just talking to a friend of mine who has a baby, and her mom and mother-in-law are taking care of the baby while she works. And she's like, neither one of them are thrilled about it. They didn't want to be childcare, but it's the best option for everybody. And so right now I think people are making a lot of best possible option decisions. I could see maybe teaming up with a couple of friends or having almost like a co-op situation. And if I don't end up sending my kids to physical school in the fall, whether because I can't or because I just decided it's not the right choice, I am lucky enough that I have a few people like that. Because I will say, even though I'm able to physically be in the house with my kids all day and I could work while they do their thing, I don't think that's the best thing for them. I mean, at some point I have to not pay attention to them and whatever they're doing.
Oh my gosh.
So that I can retreat into my office and work or my bed, which is where I'm recording this right now. But that is a reality. And if they're just out there left to their own devices all day, I don't know what they're going to be doing. I don't know that they're going to actually keep up with their schoolwork the way they're supposed to, or, you know, just be screwing around on the internet. So, I think there's going to be, there's going to have to be some solutions. And I have a feeling if they're not handed down to us, that people are just going to get really creative and figure it out in their groups of friends. And I would love to hear from listeners about how they're handling that too, because I think that would be interesting.
Yeah. So does that bring us
to homeschool?
Yeah.
So I have to admit that for the first time last week, it really did occur to me that for Clara, that might be the best option. And I hadn't even considered it up until then.
So define homeschool as it relates, or as it is different from remote learning through your school district for you.
Well, in Michigan, homeschool laws are pretty lax. Honestly, they're pretty homeschool friendly. So it would just literally mean not enrolling her.
Okay.
And it would mean either kind of having like a loose structure, co-oping with someone else, maybe buying like an out-of-the-box curriculum that looks good. Like, it could look like a lot of different things. The reason I like it better, it was something about Clara's virtual schooling last summer or spring that I found very sad in that she was so on camera. Like, she would sit down in front of the camera. Like, she would go get dressed and do her hair and then sit down. And it was like she was interviewing for a job. That's the only way I can describe it. And it didn't seem like her. She morphed into a different human while looking at her teacher and classmates on camera. And I thought, there's no possible way this is how she is all day. Like, it's not possible. When she's in school, she must relax. You know, she must. Jenna was saying by the end of the year, she was letting kids turn their cameras off because the kids all felt so awkward staring at each other the whole time. But she was saying there are teachers who won't, like, who will penalize the kids for not being on camera the whole time. And she's like, I just have a lot of empathy for these awkward seventh and eighth graders who don't want to be like on film and staring at each other. So I think I would need to know how virtual was going to be delivered before I could make a final judgment call about it. And if it looked like a lot of Zoom calls, I don't even like doing Zoom calls. Yeah. It just feels, if it looks like, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day staring at a computer, watching videos or whatever, to me, that's not the way I want my sixth grader to spend her time.
Right.
And I don't know that she's emotionally mature yet enough to like figure it out and just roll with it the way I think like William would. Like, if he'd figure out the system, figure out how to do enough to get the grade he needs and then figure out how to get some fun out of the rest of it. I don't know that she would do that.
Right. It's like she's absorbing all of the hard parts without really benefiting much.
Exactly. Right. And I'm not that concerned about her academics in sixth grade. She's really smart. She's a reader.
Right.
I'm not really worried. I mean, she will fall behind.
Yeah.
But again, like we keep talking about falling behind. Like, what does that even mean anymore?
Like everyone is behind.
Everyone's behind. Right. So.
Okay. Yeah. So to kind of put a finer point on that, just for the language we're using, homeschool, we're defining as your kid is still learning at home as they would be if they were virtually enrolled in their school. But you've essentially like decided to DIY it yourself or to purchase or enroll in some other kind of like program or curriculum that's not being provided by your public school. So it's interesting because, because the actual activity, the sitting at home, the using a computer, the reading, some of it could look the same. But I think the driving difference here is that you have more control as a parent choosing the way your child learns and how much, and they're not being told by their district school how they will virtually learn. They're probably still virtually learning.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned that we live in a district that has high academic standards and they know that they let that completely go in, you know, March, April, and May for out of necessity. But there's this sort of tone now that like, you know, we're going to bring St. Joe level learning to virtual. And I'm a little concerned how possible that is. And what effects that will have on kids
if it's gonna have
a difficult time with that.
Yeah,
Clara was stressed, like really stressed last semester. She always thought she was missing something. She would forget to turn things in. Like she was really pretty scattered. And I am concerned that that would lead to her not doing well academically and create more stress. And who needs it?
Yeah, agreed.
If she's going to be home anyway, who needs it? Like I would almost rather that was up to me. Like I get to decide what assessments there are, if any.
Right.
And it doesn't penalize her and she doesn't feel penalized by it. I feel like it could just take a layer of stress out of the situation.
Yeah.
So,
well, let me speak to a couple pros that I see. And I forgot to mention this with virtual, so I'll just lump them together because I think this would be a pro of either virtually enrolling in your local school or of homeschooling. And that is that we have had 6 months to improve our technologies and our systems. Yeah. And even if you do virtually enroll in your local public school, I am hopeful that the delivery methods will be smoother, that the chaos of like, please mute yourself, first graders, please mute yourself. Like, we gotta have figured some of this out. And even if it's not perfect, I do believe it's going to be smoother. So that I think is a pro. And then on the homeschooling side, the number of things that have popped up, the enrichment opportunities I talked about, like whatever, great courses or online tutoring. And, you know, some of these come with a higher cost. Others are can be free or very inexpensive. I do think a pro is that there have been a lot of smart people working on this for the last 6 months, and we're going to have a different array of options available to us this fall, both through our local schools and then also if we were homeschooling. So I see that as a positive, and our kids are more computer savvy. They know how to use Zoom. So I see that as a pro. And then another pro I would mention for homeschooling goes back to the con that I, you know, hammered home about virtual, and that is our youngest learners. I think if I had 4, 5, and 6 year olds, I would seriously consider homeschooling for myself, because what I believe about early childhood education and what those kids really thrive doing is not delivered on a screen. Homeschool could be a great, if you have the flexibility. And again, we come back to childcare and these other challenges, but if you have the flexibility, I think, and I'm using homeschool in big quotes because I think for 4, 5, and 6 year olds, they just really need a lot of play and some experiential learning and some structure to their day and chores and jobs and outside time. And so it wouldn't even really be very academic if it were in the Sarah Powers homeschool. So I think that could be.
Yeah, no, for, I agree. I think,
And for some parents, totally that could feel like a fun project or opportunity. If you have that ability and flexibility, it could feel like a almost like something with purpose. Like my move gave me purpose this summer, like something like that I have to do. So I could see that being a pro for some families too, just diving into a homeschool adventure. And I think some people are feeling that way about it.
And I feel like too, both you and I have had like latent homeschool fantasies, and maybe it's a chance to indulge. But also, given the choice, and I think you're totally right that if it was like, if it was 4, 5, 6, 7 year olds I was talking about, this wouldn't even be like a discussion. It would be they are homeschooled for sure, because I don't, I just wouldn't see the benefit of virtual being high enough to make up for like what you lose. I'm assuming that the choice is between homeschool and virtual. But even at Clara's age, you know, there's, when you're talking about the, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the burden on a parent. There's all different kinds of burdens. Time burden is one. An emotional burden is the other. And I would way rather have a time burden. And I do have the option of, I have more time that I can put into, like, I do have some time than an emotional burden. Because the emotional burden is with you always and I can't let it go. So like, if I know that I'm here working and in the other room, my 11-year-old is suffering or struggling, or I know that at the minute I have a moment, like a free moment, and I can go talk to her, she's going to dump all of her stresses and anxieties on me, and then I have to deal with it. That to me is like worse than if I have to spend an extra hour a day getting really organized and figuring this stuff out. Like, it just, and it is kind of like a trade-off, like what you have more of right now, capacity wise, time or energy or emotional energy or mental energy or whatever it is. It's like, that becomes part of the equation too. And yeah, I could see it depending on your kid's personality. The other thing I think is really important to talk about is, with all this talk about socialization, homeschool families already have that figured out.
Oh, totally. Yeah. That's so, like a myth of the past that homeschool family. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I think it's important, even when we're talking about kids and their social skills and the things that they learn by being in a classroom, it's important to mention that they don't, they have opportunities to learn that other than in a classroom. And that with some creativity, they could have that. Like, you could, you could provide that to them. And also that when we talk about kids not socializing right now, we're not just talking about the fact that they're not going to school. We're talking about the fact that they're not going to the grocery store.
Yeah.
They're not seeing human beings with their eyeballs the same way. They're not interacting. The mailman won't come near anybody. Like, you know, stuff like that, you know? It's the way we interact has changed so drastically. It's not just about schools being closed. It's about the way everything has changed. And so the answer can't just be school either. Like, the problem isn't just that school closed. And so the solution isn't just schools opening back up.
Right.
There's other things that are eventually going to get back to something looking like normal. And in the meantime, how do we work with what we got?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of where I feel maybe hopeful that, I'm hopeful that a distanced fall doesn't look like a distanced spring 2020.
Yeah, agreed.
And that our resources and our what we've learned about all this can be applied at the macro level and at the micro level to solve for, you know, so many of these challenges, even as we have to just keep putting one foot in front of the other. So I feel like it's time to wrap up, of course, but we always love hearing from you, and in particular when we tackle big topics like this. So if you've never emailed us before, we're just hello@themomhour.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And we read all your emails and all your comments on social, of course. But Megan, I do feel like we could revisit this in about a month or 6 weeks when almost everybody's fall has been decided one way or the other. And maybe talk about what we're doing in our families, but also like, how are we going to make this happen? Because so much of last week's episode and this week is still hypothetical.
And it's all just us complaining, really. Yeah. We're not offering any solutions because we don't know what they would be yet.
So if you all think that would be a good idea, we'd love to hear from you. And maybe in a couple months, in early September or something, we'll just check back in about all this. So this has been great, and we would love to hear from you. And as always, the show notes are at themomhour.com. I can't think of anything we'd link up for these episodes, but if we do, we will put them there. And that's themomhour.com. And we will talk to everybody soon.